Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 453. And tonight, first of all, we are going to talk about an episode of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, the Peanut Hamper episode. And then we're going to jump into some of the stuff that's released recently or about to be released and whether or not we're actually going to watch it.
So the Star Trek Lower Decks episode, I think this is something that you could like go to somebody who hasn't seen the episode before and tell them that this is a story of someone who was cast off from Starfleet and finds herself isolated and on an alien world with an alien race, and then falls in love with one of the members of the alien race, where both of them learn how to appreciate the amazing differences between their species, and it's all either works out beautifully or incredibly tragically. However,
yeah, being that it's Lower Decks, they are going to subvert all your expectations.
So I don't know if anyone remembers, but Peanut Hamper was the little AI robotic floating drone thingy that had wanted to join Starfleet. And then when she was asked to go on a dangerous mission that would save everybody, she was like, nah. And she basically had only joined Starfleet to piss off her dad. So she just left. Well, this episode starts where that one ended, with her floating in amongst the wreckage after Starfleet just leaves.
Mm-hmm. Now, she's among the wreckage. She's kind of, I don't know, marking the days or years. I don't know. There's some little hatch marks she's making. She's made her own, like, little friend, kind of like a Wilson from Castaway and everything. And she's talking about, don't worry, I'd never leave you. And as soon as some bad guy scavenger aliens come by, she immediately ditches the thing. I mean, like, no hesitation whatsoever, you know, sorry, out of here. She manages to get a ship running, sort of, but all it does is crash land into the nearest planet.
And when she wakes up, she's being taken care of by this alien race that are all anthropomorphic birds. And they did a great job. I love the whole idea of an entire planet where everything flies. Like, I mean, the cows fly, and probably I think the sheep fly, and they're all up in these beautiful little tree house kind of Ewok villages sort of thing, suspended in midair. And Peanut Hamper starts out awful, of course, because she's very selfish, narcissistic, and impulsive. But the town village elder wants to take care of her and thinks that she's going to be very good for the village, even though his son, who like steps forward and he is like hunky, like he's the only one that they portray with the actual abs kind of thing. And he doesn't want to have anything to do with her because she's completely against everything they're taught. But he has to accompany her around the village, and she shows that she can help the people there, like vitamins. None of them have vitamins. She can give them vitamins, and suddenly a lot of their health problems just go away. And she's able to tend to like the little incubation area where the eggs are, which normally, you know, only a certain percentage hatch. And because of what she can do with like her, I don't know, healing ray or something, whatever she was as a med.
Oh, she's basically got a little replicator.
Yeah, yeah. And she's able to make them all hatch and they're all healthy. And she seems to be doing really well. And the son, who is showing her around, actually flies her to his favorite place. And the conversation they're having, and I'm going, wait, is he falling in love with her? And he is.
He totally is. And oh my God, I'm going to tell you right now, like, obviously it's a cartoon and it's Star Trek, so they're not going to show us anything really explicit. But my God, this is the most explicit sex I think we've seen on this show.
It is. They actually have sex.
They totally have sex.
And they're beautifully happy. And I was expecting this entire time for there to be this love triangle, because when he had first marched up with his abs, he was accompanied by this female alien who like scolded Peanut Hamper for being a smart aleck and said, you don't know anything about him. So I thought for sure she was going to have something to say about the fact that he was in love with this alien robot. Nope. I don't think she ever makes another appearance.
Nope. I don't think, I mean, I think she's in the background at some point. That's really basically it. Because I think going by the flow of the seasons that we see go by really quick, time goes by, maybe like a year, and next thing you know, we're seeing them getting married, and she's gone totally native to the point where in the front where she usually has like this little cone thing, she's actually got like a bird beak on there. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. It's really intensely weird, but it's beautiful.
Still beautiful. Yeah, I have a note here. Bird alien robot sex. Okay, I'm not saying no.
Yes, exactly. I know. They enjoyed themselves. So sure, why not?
But in the middle of their wedding ceremony, a scavenger race suddenly appears in the atmosphere, and it's the ones that had been scavenging the area where Peanut Hamper had been floating. So she recognizes them, and they just start trying to take these ancient spaceships that had been buried beneath the village, which I think their ancestors decided they were just going to go completely away from technology of any kind, which is why the son of the town elder was so against Peanut Hamper in the first place. And they're ripping apart the entire town to get to these things. And Peanut Hamper sends out a distress signal to Starfleet, even though she knows she's going to get in trouble for the fact that she went AWOL.
Yes, and the Cerritos gets the call, of course. I mean, ships all over the place. Why wouldn't it be the Cerritos getting the call? Fine. And they decide to go in and check it out. And while they're on the way, Peanut Hamper is saying, well, I made an attempt. I don't know if anybody got the message. And long story short, she realizes that she really wants to be able to save the village. So she flies towards one of the, which, how does she get up there? Does she fly just, she takes over one of the shuttles, I think?
Either takes over one of the shuttles or just she's a floating robot AI. So she just flies up there, but she manages to save the friggin' day.
Yes. And the whole town is happy. You know, the scavengers have been thwarted. And then the Cerritos crew beams down. And at first, all the birds are saying, no, you can't take her with you. And you can't take her to a penal colony. And the captain's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We saw what she did. We know that she saved everything. And we're fine if she wants to come back to Starfleet.
And I think the alien son of the town elder is, he's just kind of bereft because Peanut Hamper says, I love you, but I know I can do more if I go back with Starfleet and try to make a difference in this universe. And then one of the scavenger aliens manages to get a hold of one of the ships under the village and takes off. And he's furious because he says that the Starfleet lied to him. And, you know, everybody on this, who's still on this radio, says, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And he said that he talked with somebody who promised that they could come in and take all of these spaceships and nobody would have a problem with it. And everybody looks at Peanut Hamper and she's like, no, are you kidding? That never happened. And the leader of the scavengers, we made a recording. And yes, it's totally Peanut Hamper. Yes, offering all of that. And she just doesn't care.
Nope, she did it completely on purpose, even though half the little town of the bird people has been destroyed. But she did it specifically because she wanted to show Starfleet that she should come back. And she does not want to live the rest of her life on a backwards bird planet. It's just brutal.
And of course, her fiance is just crying and she's, oh God, with the tears. He always cries. He even cries after we do it.
It's so, again, subverted expectations completely. No, she hasn't changed even a particle. She is just as selfish as she always was.
And the alien scavenger is attacking and the Cerritos says, wait a minute, Peanut Hamper, you could actually still save the day and get back to Starfleet. Nope, she isn't interested in sacrificing herself. She's so impulsive. I mean, everything that she set up to be the good guy, but when it comes to actually be the good guy, no, it's too much trouble. Well, some debris falls on her, so she's out for the count for the rest of the scene. But her fiance gets a hold of another one of the ancient spaceships and he goes into battle and he friggin' saves the day. I mean, he's like in the command chair and looking out of the view screen for the flock. It's all stupid and it's all wonderful.
It's great. I'm not even a little bit mad. It's amazing. But yeah, he gets back, saves the day, and then, I don't know, Peanut Hamper is talking about, oh, well, I guess it's time to go and everything. And the captain's like, you are not getting on my ship.
And she's furious. And she says, you know what? You guys are all the same. I should have called the Borg. And she starts calling them. Her little antenna pops up and she says, you're all going to be assimilated. And then Tendi just reaches out her hand, mac, and pats the antenna down. And she's like, stop that. And she tries to do it again. And then the security officer grabs hold of her and pins that down. She's like, no, no, resistance is futile. And then the next thing you see, she's being locked in the same place where they locked the super powerful, insane robot from, I think, last season. And she's locked up there. And I'm like, I was expecting to maybe feel a little bit bad for her if something like that happened. They made it so clear. No, this is where she needs to be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she is awful. And now she's surrounded by awful people. I mean, it's a whole entire room, of course, full of like evil robots and everything. And then the evil computer from one of the previous episodes is saying something about how, you know, oh, I guess we're going to... What does he say? Something like we're going to learn from each other or be friends or something.
Or
you
know? Work together to take over the universe, something like that. And they both start laughing maniacally. And then all of the other evil computers start laughing too, which pisses off Peanut Hamper. She's like, no, stop it. You can't laugh with us.
And that's it. That's where the episode ends. There is not a trope left unturned on this show. My goodness.
That was great. I mean, I really did like the alien race. I kind of hope that we see more of them because they're just very pleasing to look at, but
even if we don't.
It's just this show just opens up so many new alien races, and it's great that it's animated so you can do all of the things that you couldn't do for the live action show.
It's just so good. Yeah, and it was all like I think all A-team animators for this one. It was really well done.
Yes.
Oh, I liked it. Okay, so that's it for the episode. Next, we're going to talk about two things, one that's about to come out and one that's already come out. What's about to come out is we have a new season of Love, Death, and Robots coming out in May.
And Robert Valley, I believe, is doing one of the episodes. At least that's what it looked like from the trailer. So the same guy that did Ice and Zima Blue and Pear Cider and Cigarettes, so you know that we like him.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to that. Even if it's a mediocre season, it's Love, Death, and Robots. It's going to be weird and interesting.
Yes. It's so interesting. I really was disconcerted by the episodes in the first season because they were so heavy on the sexualized violence against women. It is true that none of the seasons that have come after have been quite as good, though, right?
Not quite. I mean, there have been some fun ones that I've definitely rewatched. Mm. I mean, I can't think of them now, but yeah.
Oh, the one with the siren in the lake. That was a pretty good one. So,
Wait a minute.
The same animator as The Witness.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And Windshield Wiper, which won an Oscar award 1 year. So, I don't suppose he's doing one this year. I didn't see anything that looked like that from the actual trailer.
I don't know. I'll have to double check and everything. Yeah, I do like that. So, but as I've said before, you know, I complained really loudly about the first season. I'm like, guys, this is not acceptable. It's really kind of gross and everything. And then the next season comes out, which was clearly not as good. And I was like thinking that people were going to be going, well, now you ruined it. So here's hoping. Okay. So from there, we're going to go on to something that actually came out at the time of this recording 4 days ago, and we're not anywhere even close to watching it. We have another season of Black Mirror.
And there is a sequel to USS Callister as one of the episodes. Mm-hmm. And what did it look like the rating was on that one so far?
Hang on. I'm going to call it back up again 1 minute. So we've said before that IMDb... their rating system is not the end-all be-all of ratings, but it is a pretty good benchmark, I think, just kind of like, is this going to be pretty good, or is it going to be not embarrassing, or is it going to be actively bad? All the episodes this season are all, there's one that was a 6.9, which means that's pretty good, and the rest of them are in the 7s, and the one about USS Callister Into Infinity, which is a sequel, it's coming in at 8.3.
Now,
awfully good.
Does it say how many people have voted?
4,600 for that one, so a significant, I mean, not, it hasn't been out that long, but yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good benchmark, like I said.
Okay, I may have to give some of those a try. It's just so hard to, like, get up the fortitude to watch Black Mirror episodes because you don't know, is this going to be like San Junipero, which is weird and heartwarming? Is this going to be like White Bear, which is really upsetting?
But good.
Or is it going to be like any of the other ones that was like just grim without any redeeming qualities? Like, what was it? Hated in America? Was that the one with the bees that would kill people?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
That was like grim and also kind of pointless.
Yeah. There was another one called Crocodile Tears, which I don't think you ever watch. I just don't recommend it. It's just a bummer. It really is just honestly a bummer. But yeah, I mean, I do want to watch it. But even last season, I felt was probably one of the weakest ones out of all the ones that have been released. There was one called Demon that I quite enjoyed, but it is still quite a bummer. And the rest of them were all just okay. You know, there was the one about the woman who, I don't know, she's like, you've seen the preview images from it. She's in the cheerleader outfit with like a penis drawn on her forehead and everything. I mean, everybody was crowing about that one. I'm like, it was fine. And then there's another one about the two astronauts out in space. And that one made me really angry because it was so pointlessly grim. I'm just like, well, now I'm just bummed out, you know? So
I'm rather glad that I haven't watched any of these.
Yeah, it's just they were just fine at best. So I don't know. We are going to watch them eventually. It's Black Mirror. We have to give them a try. But with everything going on in the current state of the world, with politics and everything, sometimes it's really hard to... It's like I never watched the American Horror Story season that was all... basically talking about the Trump administration because I was just going, nope, too close to home. Can't do it. Sorry.
So what I wanted to talk about is that Nathan and I, a few days ago, watched Godzilla Minus One, which came out in 2023. So that's doing pretty good for me that I watched something less than 2 years after it came out.
Seriously.
I liked it. And you know what? Nathan liked it too. Nathan likes Godzilla movies, and his favorite is the first one. But he says this might be like a real good runner-up for the second favorite for him.
Wow.
It is. It's just... And I was trying to think how to describe it, because there's a lot of Godzilla that I've seen through Mystery Science Theater. So a lot of it is really doofy. Mm. And a lot of the humor in it comes from it being very doofy. This has humor. It is not doofy in the least. And it is actually Godzilla marching into Tokyo, destroying things. They make it scary. And they make his flame breath that he does. They do some things that make it look really badass. I mean, Godzilla, Nathan is wondering, like, why can't Hollywood movies manage this level of CGI most of the time? Because it's not like, oh my God, it's so real. It's a monster movie, but it fits in seamlessly with everything when he's on the screen. And it's just, part of it makes me feel like it feels a little bit like a Miyazaki movie in some ways.
Oh, because interesting.
It's definitely a character study. The main character is he's a kamikaze pilot who survived the war. So you can imagine what that means for somebody who's told that your only duty is to die in battle and make sure you take people with you. And he's having to deal with that. He's having to deal with everything being rebuilt after the war that they lost. And then now they've got Godzilla. And it's just, it's really interesting. It's a very fun movie to watch. And there were a couple of things. Nathan thought he had guessed two things that the writers were doing, but he only got one of them right. But I had agreed with him on the second one. So I was really pleased with the direction that they went instead. So I highly recommend it.
Oh, good. I need to watch that. I'm just getting caught up with all the things. Oh my goodness. But yeah, it's, Hugh really loved Godzilla Minus One, but Hugh does like everything.
He likes everything.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah. I think that was he was on target with this one. I think it's really good. And Nathan thinks Godzilla movies should really just be done by the Japanese because they're the only ones that can really handle it because it's all coming from their trauma, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the Godzilla movie that came out. Hank Azaria was in it and the American one, everything, where you didn't even see Godzilla for 3/4 of the movie. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking it was fine. I enjoyed it and everything. What I loved was seeing some of the trailers in the theater.
The trailers for that one were
so good.
They were the best part of that movie. That one where somebody is leading a bunch of school kids through a natural history museum and, you know, going up to the skeleton of T-Rex is one of the largest predators ever known to anyone, and then this gigantic foot comes down and stomps it and walks away, and you see his tail going, and then you hear the Godzilla scream, like, oh, that was perfect.
So it was so good. I've got chills just thinking about it. It's funny how I don't know how often that happens where I'm like, the movie was fine. Oh my God, you guys, the trailer. Holy cow.
Let me tell you, the Wonder Woman 1984, I freaking love the first official trailer that they released with that, with the music and all the clips they used. reviews. Apparently the movie was not good, but the trailer, oh, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't know about the movie being good or not good. I just know that it went goofy, and I'm like, I can't do goofy. I'm sorry.
Really. Well, if the Red Letter Media guys talked about it, and one of the things they had a problem with was the fact that her boyfriend from the First World War comes back from a wish, whatever, but it's because he's inhabiting the body of another person, and then he and Diana end up having sex, and they're just like, you didn't get the consent of this person whose body he took over to do that. Nope. That's really problematic.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're actually talking about that nowadays. You know, it's kind of like all the times in Vampire Diaries where somebody compelled someone and had sex with them. They're like, whoa, you guys, not cool. Okay, absolutely not consent there.
Well, that was Vampire Diaries is one of those things that, how many seasons did that show last?
Seven, I think.
There were just so many times when Damon Salvatore did something that for any character would be unforgivable. And then like a couple seasons later and he does something else and it's unforgivable. And it's just like, you have to go, fine. If everybody else is going to let, you know, bygones be bygones, I guess I should too.
I don't know. Yeah. He was so pretty. I remember watching like the first episode or two episodes, and it was just going to be background noise for me while I worked on something else, because I'm like, Vampire Diaries, this is going to be dumb. And I would like to say that it's because the writing was interesting and there was some cool acting going on and everything, and those things are true and everything, but really it was just like, oh, who's that Damon guy? He's pretty. Oh my goodness. Okay, the only other thing I wanted to mention is, for any of the people who are here in San Diego, how'd you like that earthquake this morning? That was interesting.
I'm just still stunned that this is a sort of thing that people in this country get to deal with every once in a while. It's like, yeah. I've noticed two of them in my, no, three, because I noticed one that happened when we were visiting you in San Diego, but all
that's right.
Only because I just thought I heard something. I looked outside and the little round rocks that you had in your balcony were moving a little bit.
Yeah. This was, I mean, it's not, some of my friends on Facebook, they may have been closer to the epicenter. It was a 5.2 in Julian, which is a ways away from me and everything. It was startling. You know, I was sitting on the bed tying my shoes and the room kind of goes, and then all of a sudden my phone goes, because it was the earthquake alarm, which I signed up for. So it was pretty on point and everything. And then it was just kind of like doing this strong sort of shimmy. And then twice it kind of went from like that. And then it did it again at one point. And then it just quieted down, but the room just kept on rocking for like another 20 seconds.
Golly.
So it was interesting. Ugh. But it was never like, I don't think, for anybody who's never been in an earthquake, I don't know, it's not like you wouldn't have lost your balance if you were standing up while it was going. But it was just, you know, the room is moving and the room is not supposed to move. So, but yeah, it was, if it's not the strongest one I've noticed since I've been out here since 2000, it's got to be in the top three, I would say. So.
I saw a Reddit thread or something where they were talking about this bed that had been invented for Japan, which gets a lot of earthquakes. Mm-hmm. And it's set so that, like, you're up on a platform, and if there's an earthquake sense, the actual mattress drops down into the platform and the doors close over it. And there's like a little vent to bring in oxygen and like an alert thing to send to rescue people that you're stuck in there in case, you know, it falls through the floor or something like that.
Sure.
And just, I can't even remember the comments right now, but they were hilarious because like cause of death, eaten by bed.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I stayed sitting on the bed because I remember hearing at one point, if there's an earthquake and you're in bed, you should stay in bed. It's probably about the safest place for you. I'd like to say I did that on purpose, but really you just like for a second, your brain kind of goes a little blank. You're like, oh, and you're like, should I? Well, no, now it's going away. Okay, I guess not. So, you know, it's kind of, if it had been a little stronger, I hope I would have made a run for the doorway, but I just didn't think about it. You
know? I saw a few people commenting on Facebook that they appreciated the alarm, even though it was really startling, but they got it just a little bit before the shakes got started. So they had a chance to go dive under a table or something.
Yeah, this one, I definitely noticed there was one shake before it started, but really just one. So it was really, I might have, if I had felt that first shake, like sometimes my neighbor downstairs roughhouses with her dog and it does actually shake the apartment. That first shake, I might have been like, oh, is she playing with it? But as soon as that thing goes off, I'm like, oh, nope, this is an earthquake. Okay. So yeah, interesting.
Gracious.
But on that note, I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. I actually do have one more photo gallery from WonderCon to put up. I haven't put it up yet. It was just a bunch of the merch that I got pictures pictures of, you know, including some really cute stuffed dragons.
Does it include the picture of the Skibidi Toilet Titan?
It certainly does.
Yay.
Yeah, I gotta get that one in there too. So, but there are a bunch of other galleries up there from WonderCon. Make sure to check those out. All of that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So next week we will have a Night Vale episode to recap.
We will, and I will watch another Star Trek Lower Decks. And should we like commit to maybe watching an episode of Black Mirror? Just find one of the highest rated ones, or just put that off for a little bit longer?
No, let's just watch one.
Okay, just commit to one. Just figure out which one.
Yes, exactly. So, and whatever else happens to distract us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Then Starfleet beams down.
Oh, sorry. Cerritos beams down.
Okay. And then the Cerritos... Sorry, one more time.
That would be a good idea. I'm going to call them now. And she pops out her little antenna. You're all going to be you're all going to be... assimilated, sorry. Let me try that again.
Yes, all right.
Nah.
All right, I'm there.